Well, if you ask me, Kailasa, and I know you just haven't gotten around to it, but time has already proven its worth, and if you'd like to rebut this rebuttal, you can feel free to go ahead and get back together and step into the studio and make a whole album about it.
I miss you.
Well, having said goodbye to thrash, black, and death metal, it's time to say hello to their cooler younger brother who can sometimes be a much bigger dick, groove metal. Groove uses harsh vocals, but like thrash, is a subgenre more defined by its instrumentation than by the conventions of its front persons. It can happen. Specifically, groove is most easily identified by its syncopated rhythms, as we learned last season from Dimebag Daryl in a delightful yarn he spun for us concerning an evening of ribaldry and merriment for all at Benihana. There is something of a growl in groove metal. Randy Blythe from Lamb of God almost crosses over entirely into a death growl, but other vocalists of groove, like Phil Anselmo and Rob Flynn from Machine Head, really just have raspy, throaty, lower register voices that sometimes gives off a scoopy, southern kind of quality. Sorry to get so scientific. Just listen. So that's Machine Head off of the album Burn My Eyes. I would guess that groove allows listeners to pick up a bit more of the lyrics than even thrash purely by virtue of the tempos being generally slower. There are also new mutations to all subgenres at this point that completely mess up my audible lyric percentages by subgenre Excel spreadsheet, but whatever. Guess I'll just have to teach the thing to think. And then to feel. For example, there's a new groove metal band as of 2007 called Five Finger Death Punch that's kind of the Imagine Dragons of metal, and I'm not going to explain that because I don't really know what it means, but it just feels right, you know? Almost no one I've met who loved metal before these guys came along actually likes Five Finger Death Punch, so I'm guessing they'll be the next generation's, "I listen to metal, I love Enter Sandman." So hopefully they're a gateway for people to better music, but vocally, they've adopted a mixture of groove vocals and clean singing. And combining metal and clean vocal conventions is perhaps something Five Finger Death Punch adopted from another thing people love to hate, metalcore.
I assure you that hell is not a myth. We both vacation there. Hell is not a myth. We spend each winter there. No one can prepare. Stone comes and the city's abandoned. The ship's going down with the captain.
That is Map Change by Every Time I Die, and I'm gonna play them every chance I get, cause I miss them. Metalcore takes the scream vocals from punk or the growls from death metal and mixes it with clean vocals from, like, music. But it's a subgenre that emerged in the late 90s and became more popular in the new century. So, we gotta jump backward in time and pick up where thrash starts to leave off and slow things down a bit, because that's what heroin does to you. No, that's not Rob Zombie. That's the guy Rob Zombie is trying to sound like, the other Osborne, King Buzzo of Melvin's infamy. Parenthetical the and parenthetical Melvin's kicked off sludge in the early 90s, left it, came back, left again, and have kind of been dipping in and out ever since, which really makes him the perfect father figure for sludge metal, a subgenre that, much like Carmine Liguzio wearing a Carl Havoc suit at the Fairfield Mall, doesn't even want to be around anymore. Hey, you know, it is a lot of work to get there, but we made it together. Sludge metal, as those of you who know the pod well or follow me off the social media cliff known as Twitter, X, know that I love sludge metal. You may also know that I'm a contributor to the Musipedia of Metal site and sometimes cannibalize album reviews for the pod and vice versa. And I want to be open about it anytime I decide to cannibalize someone, thing, something. To cannibalize something. Anyway, here's a little bit I wrote about our current subgenre because it's easier than saying something new. Sludge was born in the Pacific Northwest by bands like parenthetical The and parenthetical Melvin's, see? Cannibalism. And Blood Circus, but mutated into the subgenre we recognize today in the heavy metal laboratory of 90s New Orleans. Leading the way were sludge pioneers Crowbar, who sounded like a bunch of your uncles got together to write music about how work sucks, and then it turned out that they were shockingly great at it. From the past continued, the emergence of their NOLA sister bands like Acid Bath, Soylent Green, and I Hate God posited sludge as a metal movement seemingly devoted to abject nihilism. It was a filthy, brutal, self-destructive, and regular destructive mirror held up to nature. Before someone smashes it into your face, then uses the broken shards to carve void slut on their torso and pass out in the corner of an abandoned housing project. Sludge is a subgenre that, by all outward appearances, wishes it didn't have to exist. Less a creative impulse and more the cancerous inevitability of a world that is truly and deeply fucked. But enough about me. That was from a review of an album by Iron Buddha that is perfect and you should listen to. It's called Raise/Repose. The technique of a sludge metal vocalist can, I think, be best described in the immortal words of Randall, narrator of the 2011 viral video The Crazy Nasty Ass Honey Badger. They just don't give a shit. I have no idea how these men and women can produce this sound over the duration of a single song, let alone an entire album, or inconceivably, a lengthy career. Like that of Mike Nine Williams, a significant improvement over the previous 8 models, by the way, who has been recording and touring for 35 years while sounding like this. I That's White Neighbor off of the 1993 sludge staple Take As Needed for Pain by I Hate God. Sludge is heavily influenced by the drumming of hardcore punk, and as you can hear there, the vocals. But going forward, there's also something of a sludge stoner growl, which is more mid-range and comprehensible than the death growl. Actually, Druids, the band that opens and closes every episode of this podcast, is a great example. And here's another one. That's a band called Fire Breather from Dwell in the Fog, my 2023 album of the year. I'm going to go see those dudes in September. Rupee, we doing this? I always think of sludge, stoner, and doom as a kind of sliding scale for vocal heaviness. Prototypical doom vocals are the high-pitched, ethereal, clean singing of Ozzy Osbourne. And as you move towards stoner metal, there's often a deliberate low-fidelity filter mixed into the production to make the vocalist seem like they're underwater, or in another room, or the trunk of their car as we speed out of Atlantic City before Sonny the Thumb and the Fumangelli brothers realize I switched the suitcases at the drop-off, and considering that even in this humidity, the cheapskate currently trying to kick his way through the backseat of his own car never bothered to put in AC, it might not be long before it gets real quiet back there and we turns into just me. Anyway, that was my weekend. What I'm trying to get to is the bridge between sludge metal and the final topic of today, post-metal. No, I'm not covering everything. It's not going to be comprehensive. I'm just trying to give you an idea about the big pillars of harsh vocals and where the extremes go. So closing out sludge, for lack of a better description, the vocals just sound painful. Especially those vocalists who sing in their upper register. It almost sounds like the singer just peeling their voice open, like a time elapse of rotting fruit or flowers blooming or something. I'm just trying to describe what I'm seeing in my head when I'm listening to some sludgier vocalists, and there is no one who sounds more like they are coming apart in layers than the guy who recently did just that, ruining everything for everyone forever. The lead singer of Neurosis, Scott Kelly. So before he was known for being a terrible father and husband, Scott Kelly was not only the voice you heard following Pepper Keenan on the Shrine Builder song Solar Benediction that went into the show break, he was also the lead singer for the sludge stoner post-metal band Neurosis since the late 80s. In 2022, however, Kelly admitted to years of emotionally and physically abusing his family, then blamed his bandmates and the culture of musicians around him for not doing anything to stop it. You'd think the moment you came clean about terrorizing your own child and spouse wouldn't be the best time to claim the moral high ground, but what do I know? I've never threatened my family with anything other than reading facts out of a bird book I bought on a road trip. It worked, too. I got to drive the whole way. And an illustrated book about birds. So for the first time in the history of the music industry, a pretty bad person with a lot of talent ended up having success. And here's the thing, I don't really know the extent to which Scott Kelly abused his family. He labeled it emotional, financial, and physical abuse, but that's all the more information we have. Now, Kelly obviously struggles with mental health. That's not an excuse. A lot of people struggle with their mental health and don't torture their children. But because I'm going to use Kelly's voice as an example of the culmination of sludge metal vocals and how that influenced post-metal, I feel like I should at least explain that I am attempting to separate the art from the artist here, affording Neurosis's frontman an allowance that I'm not really willing to make for other artists like Quarthon. Scott Kelly was an abuser. He did presumably terrible things to his family. Finally, and rightly, he eventually admitted to those abuses and retired from the profession of music. But nothing in the catalog of Neurosis is a promotion of abuse. And playing sound of Kelly's voice is not in any way meant to imply that his talent somehow balances out or ameliorates those misdeeds. But I am talking about the history of metal vocals, and Scott Kelly is an important figure in that narrative, in the same way that you can't really talk about the history of production in rock and roll in the 60s and not talk about Phil Spector. Quarthon and other black metal, Viking metal, or racism-adjacent metal artists are either actively or passively promoting an abhorrent philosophy through their music. They are, at best, apologists for fascism, and that's why I played 20 seconds to show you what Bathory sounds like, and then I talk for 5 minutes about why he can go suck a bag of gorilla dicks at the center of the sun. Scott Kelly is just a fucked up dude and a hypocrite with a very influential sound, and I would like to talk about that sound to close out this episode on harsh vocal technique. Caveat achievement unlocked! That's Locust Star off of Neurosis's fifth album, Through Silver in Blood, in 1996. On their earlier album, Scott Kelly sounds very sludgy. He has that upper register, pealing shout. But as his voice ages and the production improves, Kelly's pitch begins to drop, and that raspy quality starts to take on an almost otherworldly, wraith-like quality, which is where I think you start to hear the incipient sound of post-metal. Chronologically, post-metal pioneers Isis had already been making the Binu Ninu since the year 2000 and were working toward the vocal conventions of that subgenre's final form, as you can hear from their 2002 album Oceanic, about a man who overcomes deep dissociative issues to find love, only to realize that the woman of his affection has been simultaneously having an incestuous affair with her own brother, causing the man to retreat into himself once again, ultimately taking his own life and drowning himself in the ocean. Oceanic was both a critical and conceptual triumph for the band and served as a cautionary tale about the pitfalls of ChristianMingle.com. That's what the mingle part means. And here's the opening track to Oceanic, The Beginning and the End. But in 2007, the progressive stoner sludge band that I have talked about frequently because I clearly love them, known as Mastodon, were the first to bravely ask the question, what if Scott Kelly was in a better band? Righteous girl, it blazes fury. Kelly was a guest vocalist for a single track on six consecutive Mastodon albums, none of which demonstrates the vocal conventions of post-metal more articulately than one of my favorite tracks off of my least favorite album, Spectralight, from 2011's The Hunter. And so that spacey, ethereal, wraith-like sound soon became a hallmark of many post-metal bands, such as the aforementioned Isis and Neurosis, Godflesh, and others. But for the purest example of a post-metal vocal, I return to one of my all-time favorites, Cult of Luna, and their 2013 dystopian masterpiece based on Fritz Lang's 1927 black-and-white film Metropolis, Vertigal. The song is Vicarious Redemption. So at this point, you might be wondering, is Quinn okay? But you might also be wondering, why did post-metal artists more or less collectively choose to adopt this particular sound? What is it about that eerie, hollow, pseudo-spectral rasp that made post-metal vocalists like Scott Kelly of Neurosis, Aaron Turner of Isis, and Johannes Persson of Cult of Luna choose it to be one of the prominent identifying features of the subgenre? Great question. While I've talked about a number of other subgenres that either utilize or flirt with harsh vocals, for me, there are, surprise, surprise, four that really stand out for the purpose of investigation. Thrash and groove aren't really harsh vocal subgenres. There are exceptions, like Max Cavalera from Sepultura and Randy Blythe from Lamb of God, as I mentioned earlier. But largely, the vocal conventions of thrash and groove amount to people with naturally gravelly or growly voices adapting those qualities to clean singing. Metalcore combines the vocal conventions of death metal, punk, and clean singing to create their own unique sound. But those subgenres that have cultivated unique and categorically identifiable harsh vocal conventions can, I think, be narrowed down to death metal, black metal, sludge metal, and post metal. What I'm hoping to articulate here is that the unique vocal qualities of each of them were chosen because they are a distillation of the subgenres themselves. In other words, the vocal conventions represent the essence of the subgenre from which they come. What I'm hoping to articulate here is that the unique vocal qualities of each of them were chosen because they are a distillation of the subgenres themselves. In other words, the vocal conventions represent the essence of the subgenre from which they came. I'm going to try to break them down one by one because I'm trying to give my more growl and shriek-averse listeners a way into the sound. Not necessarily so that they can learn to stop worrying and love the harsh, but just to offer the possibility of a new angle from which to approach the topic. I'll try to move fast because otherwise I will have spent what is basically a month trying to explain why full-grown adults choose to make monster sounds for a living, and that's a little above my pay grade. So, okay, here we go. Death metal is a low, throaty growl. It's a guttural, corporeal, primal sound that represents a subgenre centered around the more gruesome and visceral aspects of biological life, with album titles like Eaten Back to Life, Reek of Putrefaction, Slowly We Rot, and simply Human. Black metal is a high-pitched keening, an unnatural shriek intended to sound malevolent, insidious, and essentially horrifying. It's a sound that represents a subgenre exploring the supernatural terror hidden in the natural world, as well as anti-Christian and neo-pagan systems of belief, with album titles like Under a Funeral Moon, The Gathering Wilderness, Sons of Northern Darkness, and Heaven Shall Burn. Sludge metal, as described earlier, is the sound of entropy. Oh, good, Quinn. Now you have to describe entropy. Why don't you just try to explain alchemy while you're at it? Wait, I already tried that. Oh well, try, fail, try again, fail better. Nerds defined entropy as the unavailability of a system's thermal energy for conversion into mechanical work. But for those of us who have touched a boob, it simply means that order inevitably declines into chaos, or even simplier, things fall apart. Ice melts. Fire dies. Over time, load will eventually become reload. Every day, millions of drinking glasses fall to the floor and shatter into pieces. But never once have random shards of glass suddenly gathered themselves into a cup-like shape and leapt onto your countertop, let alone filled themselves with beer. Yet. Peeling, deteriorating vocals represent a subgenre that embraces the inevitable decline of all things, with album titles like When the Kite String Pops, Inevitable Collapse in the Presence of Conviction, Dope Sick, and No Absolutes in Human Suffering. Sludge metal is the sound of entropy. And finally, post metal, with a vocal palette that takes its cue from the subgenre's name. It's as incorporeal as death is corporeal, as vacuous and posthumous, or posthumous, as the site of a residual haunting, with album titles like In the Absence of Truth, Somewhere Along the Highway, Lost Empyrean, and Souls at Zero. So, as I hope I've demonstrated here, the vocal conventions of these subgenres are not random. They are a deliberate, if condensed, vehicle for the larger philosophical and aesthetic characteristics of their subgenre as a whole. Unlike the vocals of more popular genres, rarely do the vocal conventions of these subgenres run counter to the emotional intentions of the music. You know the song Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People? how it has this really poppy, happy sound. All the young kids, okay, it has that really poppy, happy sound, but the lyrics are about a school shooting. You don't get that much in death, black, sludge, or post-metal. These bands instead use the sound of the vocals to push the emotion of a song to a place of extremity, the furthest that such a subject is able to go. It's a larger feature of heavy metal. I think that's why a lot of metal bands write albums about the sea and outer space. Those are voids. Those are the edge of our existence. But death, black, sludge, and post, or de blagepo for short, push the proverbial envelope through their vocals as far as it can conceivably go. So when you hear the horrifying banshee wails of black metal or the time-elapse putrefaction of an animal corpse courtesy of sludge metal, remember that if you ever hope to understand or, God forbid, appreciate harsh vocals, these discordant, unsettling waves of sound are actually tools to help you embrace the emotional intent of the artist. And once I realized that for myself, I found a doorway into harsh vocals, and here I am now telling you about it while getting paid to do a job that I've chosen not to do for about an hour now. And wouldn't it be nice to take a break once in a while? Yeah, it would. And it is. And there you have it, a far from comprehensive survey of the evolution of heavy metal vocals. There's a huge punk influence that I'm not even going into. The big takeaway, though, that I hope you'll take away from this is that there isn't a heavy metal vocal style, but many various styles with many various intentions. If the big hang-up for people is that I can't understand the words, you can remind them that's why metalheads love liner notes. If you buy a physical copy of the album or download the digital booklet, metal bands with harsh vocals will most likely include the actual words. Most bands with incomprehensible lyrics aren't intending to convey crystal clear meaning through the words, but rather the emotion of the music, the feeling it evokes. You can think of harsh vocals as another instrument. And take some pressure off of yourself in attempting to understand the words. You got a lot going on. Be kind to yourself and each other. The other big point that I want to make is that harsh vocals weren't invented by heavy metal bands. They were adopted. I started talking about harsh vocals in the 1920s, but those vocal techniques have been around for much, much longer than even Western culture. The first historical reference to Tuvan throat singing, what we call Tibetan throat singing, appeared in 206 to 220 BCE during the Han Dynasty. That's the dynasty that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. And it was in reference to northern barbarians who worshipped wolves and sang with a scary roaring sound when they attacked to terrify their enemies. And today, we just call that a monomarth. And just to point out that this has been with us forever, take a listen to this example of some Tibetan throat singing, and then you can do your own compare-contrast and see how closely that lines up with the modern metal heavy growl. Finally, here is a frequently referred to quote from a Muslim traveler named Ibrahim Yaqub upon visiting northern Germany circa 961 CE. The account goes something like this. Never before have I heard uglier songs than those of the Vikings of Schleswig. The growling sound coming from their throats reminds me of dogs howling, only more untamed. Okay, but did they have a good merch page at least? As you can see, hating harsh vocals is a generations-old affair. You're not alone, Aunt Debbie. So if the sound of growls or screams or retching blood doesn't do it for you, cool. But it's not because the sound is an imposition of avant-garde weirdness from the 20th century that was never what God intended for the human voice. Lemmy is God, and we all just do what he says. Maybe you should too. And that is our epic first episode of Season 2 on heavy metal vocals. Thank you all so much. On the next, and Volume for All, we are going to take a multi-part deep dive into the life and works of one of heavy metal's great luminaries. Which luminary would that be, you ask? There's only one way to find out. Fuck around and look out! On the next, and Volume for All.